Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeMars. And we have with us our special guest today, Roy Hash.
Hello.
I wanted you all to be impressed with Roy Hash as much as I am. He teaches at the Texoma Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Wichita Falls, Texas. He also was the founder, right, of the Texoma Judo Club.
Yes.
Head instructor there. He is a national level coach, certified in a whole bunch of things, fifth degree black belt in judo, and was on active duty in the U.S. military for 26 years. And that was one of the many impressive things about him. He also, 21 of those years, was in the Special Forces. So all of you people who claim to be Green Berets, we know you really weren't, but Roy really was. And one of the things that people may not know about him is that he also was greatly impressing my daughter Rhonda when she went to visit him, because he was one of the top players in Call of Duty. So we want to dive first into you talking about military, real military, and then maybe get into, well, not maybe, for real, get into talking about fake military in gaming. So the first thing I wanted to ask you about, Roy, and I looked this up last night because I thought, gee, maybe it's just my impression, but it's true. The number of people in this country, the percentage serving in the military is going way down. So less than half of 1% of people now have either served in the military or currently serving. And when I was young, that was vastly different. And the same statistic, anybody fact-checking me here? I know Maria was a fact-checker when she was just out of college. The Pew Research report said that 77% of people over 50 either served in the military themselves or had an immediate family member who did, like a father or a brother or a son. And I know, like my husband and I, that's certainly true for us. And then it said people over 30, it's something like 57%, and under 30, it's less than half. So I wondered, having a significant amount of military service at the highest level under your belt, how do you think that's affecting us as a society, or do you think it makes no difference?
No, I think it affects us. I think part of it is it was a different generation. For those of us that are over 50, we were born shortly after World War II, when the entire populace of the United States was involved in either supporting or fighting a world war. And since then, the wars have been smaller. Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, which I was in, everything was smaller. You didn't have as many people. So people aren't as involved anymore. Nowadays, when there's a casualty, it affects the immediate family and their friends, the people in the unit. But back during World War II, so many people died, over 300,000 Americans. It was more widespread, I think. And I think, too, it's kind of partly where you're born in the country. I'm in Texas, so the South tends to be a little bit more patriotic. When I was in the military, there were way more people in from the South and from the central part of the country than we'd run across from, say, New York City. I don't know why that is. I think for some of us, it might have been a chance to escape our upbringings. I know for me, I grew up in a real small town in Texas. And for me, the only opportunity I had was what I was going to make of myself. And the military was that opportunity.
You know, it's funny. I think our games have some connections there. And one reason for that is we make games that most of them have a Native American story. And we do a lot of research on the reservations and work there and are in a lot of schools there. And Native Americans have the highest rate of participation in the military of any racial or ethnic group in this country. So yes, you're right that as a region, the South generally has a higher proportion of people in the military. But the American Indian reservations, I think, are by far the highest. And it's really unusual when I meet people on the reservations to meet anybody who doesn't have an immediate family member in the military or who wasn't themselves.
You know, I think that's true. I think partly for the Native Americans, I think it's cultural based because they come from a warrior type society. And the warrior ethos is honored within that culture.
You know, it's funny you say that because sometimes people would say, oh, how dare you say anything like that? It's racist. But you're absolutely right, number one. And it was funny because I heard those exact words almost come from a tribal elder from the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians when she was speaking at the North Dakota Indian Education Association last year. And she said exactly that. And it's funny, our company is called Seven Generation Games. A lot of the tribes believe that to understand people, you should look seven generations back to see where they came from. And often when you meet people on the reservations, they'll introduce themselves and someone will say, I'm Raven Whitetail and my mother is Donna Whitetail and my father is Ed Brownstone. And they'll go on and give their family. And what she said is exactly what you said, that Native Americans in many parts of the country come from a warrior culture. And so this is part of who they are. Funny that you're vastly different in every way. And you both came to that same conclusion immediately.
It goes back to who you are as a person. From almost the earliest I can remember, I wanted to be a soldier. I mean, that's just what I was. In fact, there was a time when I was about 5 or 6 years old, we'd been down to a Memorial Day ceremony where they had big parades and the National Guard were there. And we came home, and at the time we lived on this major highway that went through town. And my parents heard a big commotion and they came out. And I had on this old steel helmet with no helmet liner. You could barely see my nose sticking out from underneath this thing. And I had a plastic gun, and I was marching down the middle of the road, back and forth, up and down the road, having my own parade as I stopped traffic on this major highway. So, I mean, it just, I've always been like that.
One of the things, too, is you're in Texas, we're in Los Angeles, and they're two very different places. We talk about the shift in participation in the military and knowing number of people in the military. Is there been a shift in the South too, in Texas? I mean, do you notice a difference from when you were younger to now? I mean, you were talking about there's still a very participatory culture, but has it started to shift as well?
No, I don't think so. I've been back in Texas since 99. I live just outside a small community of 6,000 people, large community 15 miles away of about 105,000 people. But in this part of Texas, it is still very patriotic, still very red, white, and blue, mom and apple pie and that sort of thing. I think there are enclaves in Texas where it tends to have more of a liberal point of view. Austin, for example, down around that area. But for the main part, I think conservatism rules within Texas. I've never been anywhere in Texas where when I was in the military, where I didn't feel supported.
Well, I think when it comes to the military, there's both the good part and I wouldn't say the bad part, but the neutral part. You mentioned that when you were young, whatever you were going to be was what you'd make of yourself. I know a lot of people who are interested in going to the military in South Los Angeles. You probably met Gary Butts. He's also a fifth degree black belt. Mm-hmm. And he has come and worked with our young people in South Los Angeles. And one of the things that they wanted to talk to him about was he was a Marine. And a couple of our boys who are in high school said they were interested in going to the Marines. And I said, we'll talk to Gary because he's not a recruiter and he'll give you the straight scoop. But for many of the kids that I see, whether they're in South Los Angeles, they're in Phoenix, Arizona, or like my late husband, they're in Myrtle Creek, Oregon, they're looking at the military as a ticket out. So sometimes it's not even the greatest patriotism. It's that this is my only way out of this town of 175 people, or this is my only way to go and get some training and education because my family has no money. So do you see that as well?
I think that's a little bit of all of it. I think people join the military to get training. It's an opportunity to learn how to work with computers or be a nurse. I also see people like me that see it as their ticket to a better life. You go into the military for a few years, you get the GI Bill when you come out, plus the training you get when you're in the military. I think there's some people that just want to go play soldier. They want to be in the Army and carry a gun. Not so much to maybe kill people, but they want to wear a uniform and be in the military. What I saw in the military is you could take someone that was on the cusp of either being a good person or heading down the wrong road. And the military pushed them one way or the other. It either straightened them up and turned them into an adult where they learned discipline and they got their life off to a really good start, or they just couldn't adapt and they were never going to adapt to society. My son served in the military. He actually served with the 2nd Ranger Battalion. He saw combat in Afghanistan. he was a good man before he joined the military. Serving in the military made him a better man. He understands a lot more of why Dad was the way Dad was growing up. And he saw some things that made him realize that he needs to appreciate what we have here in this country, because there's a lot of people that would die for the opportunity and the things that we have.
It's interesting because you said it kind of changed your son's perspective, seeing where you had kind of come from. What was it like for you as a parent? How different is it as a parent with someone, with a child in the military? There's kind of that sense of maybe lack of control, or probably always worried about them a little bit when they're on active duty.
I did worry. Part of being a parent, you worry about your children all the time. I mean, that's just being a parent. With my son going in the military, I knew he was going to be with the Rangers. I know what the Rangers do. I know that it's a dangerous lifestyle. But if you're going to go into danger, you want to go in with guys that are going to and girls that are going to have your back, that you can trust, that you know if you get into a situation, they are going to do everything they can do to take care of you. I worried about him dying. I worried about him being injured. But I also know that freedom within this country is not free. And if no one is willing to step up and perhaps pay that price, at some point we're going to lose our freedom and what we have within this country. You're only going to be free as long as you're willing to fight for it. My family has been in the military different generations, going all the way back to the Mexican-American War back in 1848. My family has stepped up and done what we need to do to secure our freedoms, and I'm very proud of that.
And, you know, that's rare. My late husband, Ron, he was in the military. His father was in the military. His son, Todd, was in the military. His grandson, Travis, was in the military. And on Veterans Day last year, Todd's wife posted a picture of them, and I thought, wow, that's really unusual these days to have. Well, for one thing, there's a lot of people immigrants, so it wasn't like they had any possibility. But even to have like four or five generations that served in the military. And I was going to say, too, when you talked about people going either one way or the other, I think for some people, even if they don't do as well after they get out of the military, it's sometimes for whatever reason, people end up, whether at alcohol or drugs or just not being a very good person. For many people I've met, those years in the military were the proudest of their life. That maybe, and I've heard people say that to me, well, maybe I was a screw up after that, but at least I went and I did, you know, my 3 or 4 years. And I wonder, and you could tell me I'm completely wrong because I have zero experience on this other than being like a brat on the Air Force bases. It seems like some people function well in that system where everything is sort of laid out. This is who's in command. This is what you do. This is your job. You get paid at this point. If I tell you to go to Mississippi, to Biloxi, that's where you go. And they function well in that. But when they get out with less structure, they just don't. Is that something you've seen?
I think that's true. I've got a couple nephews who had some issues. They never went in the military. They just didn't handle structure. They have trouble living within the norms of society. And I think that's true for a lot of people. My experience being where I served, having served in special forces, the majority of the people that I served with were either officers or senior NCOs. And we worked anywhere from 12-man teams down to singleton missions where you'd be sent off by yourself. And you had to be disciplined because you were the only one there and you had to be responsible to get the job done. And within that team environment, that was the main thing for us. You didn't want to let the team down. You didn't want to let your teammates down. That was my worst fear, was screwing up and getting kicked off a team, because that just would have killed me.
So I didn't know until my father passed away that he had been in the Army. He'd been in the Air Force for 16 years. I knew that. But for some reason, the first 4 years, he was in the Army. And when he had cancer and he was dying, that was his phrase he used all the time. And my mom would say, well, you're okay. Are you going to go to this chemotherapy? And he said, I'll be a brave soldier. And he wanted that on his tombstone. It is on his tombstone. You know, it has his name and it says a brave soldier. And I wondered, why would that be so important to somebody to think about, like you said, being a good soldier? Why is that so important to people?
I think it goes back to who you are as a person. To be somebody that runs towards danger versus running from danger, I think it just says a lot about your character. And I never claimed to be a hero. I did my job. I knew a lot of heroes. I knew a lot of legends. And I've walked among men who did unbelievable things that if they were on a movie from Hollywood, people wouldn't believe the things they've done. And for me, it was a privilege to be able to stand beside them and have them look at me with a measure of respect because they knew they could count on me to stand beside them if things went south.
You talked about being in special forces, and that's obviously the elite within the military. And so my question on that is, with those people, the people who run toward danger, not away, do you think that's something that people are, I don't want to say born with, but do certain people have that kind of in them more than others? Is it something that gets developed? Because a lot of times we talk about it's kind of this combination of nature versus nurture. But where does that come from?
You know, I think it's a little of both. I think it's something you're born with. I think that it's also how you're raised in the military, who you're around. When I was at Fort Devens in 10th Special Forces, one of my teammates was Gary Gordon, who later won the Medal of Honor in Somalia with Delta. He volunteered to exit a helicopter and go down and try and recover other Americans when he and his partner knew no other help was coming and that they were probably going to lose their lives in that endeavor, which they ultimately did. And I know part of it is because it's just who Gary was. Gary was an outstanding soldier. He was a fine human being, and he cared about other people. But I also know that on our team, the ethos that we had, that we were there to do the job, and we were going to do our job, and the Ranger Creed is you never leave a man behind. So it's a little of both, I think.
I have to ask you a somewhat personal question because I think this a lot. Now, you and I both did judo a lot. You won a gold medal in the Masters. And I sometimes go to these things where all these judo guys talk about how tough and how big of badasses they are. Or now I see people in mixed martial arts. And I have a bunch of friends because I used to train at the Naval Training Center when I was a competitor. And every few months we'll get together. And a lot of these guys served in World War II. So they're much older than me. And I will hear them talk about people they know or people they knew who, like one story they were talking about is a kid that was on a Navy ship and one of the boilers burst. He went into this room to fix it and sealed it off, knowing it was going to burst. And basically he was going to die right there. And this kid was 19. Or these guys were talking about scaling up the back of a cliff in the dark to attack a Nazi camp because they couldn't get him from the front because, you know, they were aiming that way. And the only way was to, like, climb up ropes in the back of this cliff. And obviously they saw them, you were all going to get shot. I mean, when you hear people talking about, oh, how tough they are because they won some match on three penalties or threw somebody, do you secretly laugh to yourself about them? Because I would if I was you.
Perception is reality to a certain extent. It depends on what your world is. I listen to people sometimes at my day job at work complaining about how rough it is. And I just smile at them and go, look, I slept in my own bed last night. I got to eat this morning and nobody shot at me all day. It's a good day today. You know, so it's just relative. It is what it is. I understand there's a difference between combat and sport. So when a football team says we're going to war, nah, not really. Not really. You're going to put a lot into it. You may suffer some injury and some pain, but odds are you're going to go home at night and sleep in your own bed and eat dinner.
We'll be right back.
Did you know that 92% of U.S. homes have a computer? Yes. Yes, they do. And 43% of homes have a child under 18. Why aren't more kids playing educational games on those computers? Because they suck. The educational games, not the kids. Until now, download Spirit Lake or Fish Lake. Check out Forgotten Trail or Making Camp with no download required. All of our games are under $10. Teach math and social studies. Let your child play on a real computer and learn real-life math. If you're on Steam, be the coolest aunt, uncle, big brother, or sister on the block and download Fish Lake. The little rugrat can play on your computer, learn fractions, and you can get some peace while you talk on the phone to Vin.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Maria DeMars. And we still have with us our special guest, retired, I don't know if you have officially retired, but Green Beret / Army Ranger and 5th degree judo black belt, judo instructor, and Call of Duty player extraordinaire, Roy Hash.
Hello, hello.
Yeah, Roy might be one of our only guests where we actually, special actually is part of his title because he was special forces. Usually we just say our special guest, but there's nothing special about, well, there's lots of special things about them, I take that back. Yeah, but we wanted to talk about Call of Duty, where you're talking about real war, and this is maybe a little bit, well, I would say not maybe, this is very much lighter when talking about virtual war. Amory was saying Rhonda went to your house and came back and was blown away, because Rhonda's a big gamer, about how good you were at Call of Duty and to be among that. So I guess talk a little bit, how did you get into playing Call of Duty in the first place?
My youngest son was playing Xbox or PS4 at the time, and we were over at a friend's house, and they let me try it, and oh, it was terrible. Oh, I was bad. So when my son graduated high school, we bought him an Xbox as a graduation present, and my wife bought one for me. So I started playing Xbox. I guess back then it was the first iteration of Call of Duty, and I was bad. I had never played video games. So I did what people said you're not supposed to do. I tended to camp a lot because I couldn't move and shoot at the same time. Over time, I got better, and it's something that I enjoy doing. It became more fun when I actually met people online and got to where I could use a headset and communicate with people. And I've made some really good friends while I gamed. People that I play with today that I've known almost 20 years at this point. They're scattered all over the world, from California, Canada, England, and I've met many of them as I've traveled around the United States and across the globe. We get together and visit, and it's a great thing for camaraderie, I guess.
Now, I have a question. So in our games, we have this part where you're shooting rabid wolves have got you up a tree and bow and arrow. And Emory always tells a story about she went to a school and a woman did it. And usually it takes people a lot of tries to get it, especially the very first time. And she just went boom, 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 boom. And when we commented on it, she said, well, I go bow hunting every weekend. And Dennis, who does the game, is a physicist, and he made sure the trajectory was just right. So it was kind of went perfectly. How different is it? I mean, obviously not like shooting people, but you know what I'm saying? When you're shooting Call of Duty, how different is it? Does that having that arms experience come in handy, or is it a totally different experience?
I think there's a little bit of it. Call of Duty, maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. There is one game I play called World of Tanks. Mm-hmm. That's a tank-based game where you're riding around in World War II era tanks from a variety of different countries. And in that game, you have to have the right trajectory. You have to lead the vehicle that you're shooting at with sufficient lead to where the vehicle will drive into your shot. So it's kind of like skeet shooting to a certain extent. So there's that challenge, and if you screw it up, you lose.
So where did you find your team of people that you play with?
There's a couple people that I knew from the area. We were talking, and they said, oh yeah, I'm playing Call of Duty. And I said, well, this is my gamer tag. So we got together. And then as we played together, we'd be in a small squad playing, and other people would see how we played, or they would join a conversation we were having and say, hey, can I play with you guys? And we'd say, yeah, you know. And then the people that we got along with that liked our style of play, we just tend to band together. We've got people ranging in age from, oh, I don't know, 16 up to me, and I'm 62. So we've got the whole gamut of ages between there, and we have a number of females that play with us too. And I think they like playing with us because sometimes the females that are gaming, they get a lot of extra garbage from some of the male players that they shouldn't have to put up with. And I think if they play with us and they know that guys are going to have their back, and we're going to protect them from some of the garbage that they have to put up with.
That's really cool, and I hadn't thought about it. But, of course, I've met your wife when Rhonda came back, and thank you belatedly for such hospitality, by the way. I know she had a great time staying with you guys. And she says, oh, my gosh, Roy and his wife are so cute. And you have a daughter, right?
Right. I actually have three daughters. Right.
So I think I never really given it much thought, but I think in those games, probably playing with somebody who's married and has adult daughters and kind of can identify that young woman that's playing with them. If I wouldn't want anybody treating my daughter like that, I'm not going to allow this. So there's a tip for you young women who are gamers who are listening. If you're looking for a team, that maybe you're better off if there's some people older on it that aren't jerks.
Right.
And how do you get better? I mean, one of the things we talk a lot about is experience and just playing, but what are some of the things you did to get better? How did you improve?
I just played a lot, and then there were certain things that you have to do, like double jumping, where you've got to press A two times to jump or do something. I would have issues with that. So some of the people I played with would give me tips. If you get to this, you need to do that. And there are times that we would go offline and just practice areas where I was having a problem jumping or something like that. There are some things I do very well. Some things I'm still working on. But I think that's part of the challenge of gaming. I primarily do Call of Duty, but I do a lot of different things. I've played The Witcher. I played Elder Scrolls, Assassin's Creed. So different games had different challenges where you may have to figure out a puzzle. You may have to work out a riddle. You may have to do a sequence of events in a certain order in order to get through a door. So all those things stimulate me intellectually. It keeps my brain young and my dexterity of trying to work the trigger and move my character. I think for my age, I've still got pretty good reflexes.
And I think listening to you, you've countered a number of stereotypes. One of them, I don't know if you listen, I'm sure you listen to our podcast religiously. Just pretend you do because we're recording this. But we had Jessamine Duke on a few weeks ago, and she was originally a fitness model, then a mixed martial artist. She was in the UFC, and now she's a professional gamer. And one of the things she talked about a lot, which is, I think, counter to the stereotype, is gaming is a social activity. How when she was younger, she would play games with her friends and hang out on each other's couches at their house. And now she does it live on Twitch TV and people watch her and make comments. And you've kind of made a lot of comments about that too, about how you met people that in your community and then you met people around the world that you went to meet personally in the games. And another stereotype I think you're really countering is this, that the only people who play games seriously are 16-year-old boys in their mom's basement. And you probably have raised boys way past 16 now, and you don't live in your mom's basement. And there's this whole group of what is referred to in the industry as silver gamers, people who are over 50 that play games to kind of keep themselves mentally acute. Like, you know, we know sometimes people play our games like that, sort of a gaming mental version of doing a few push-up. Maria hates my push-up analogy. But they'll do a few math problems in the game, figure out how many arrows they need to shoot wolves, and go ahead. Do you look at your gaming as kind of something you do to keep mentally fit, or is that just totally off?
Yes. I think one of the things, too, that it does that I haven't mentioned is a lot of people have, I won't say trouble, but there's some adjustment issues when you leave the military. When that's been your whole life and that's what you've lived, there's an adjustment where you're torn from that team environment and the camaraderie that you have in the military. So the gaming actually gives me part of that back. And I don't know that I've ever had really full-blown PTSD. I know I've had some anxiety issues. There were periods in my life when we got back from Desert Storm that I didn't feel comfortable unless I had a weapon very near me. I think playing Call of Duty and those sort of things, I think that helps. I think it helps get out aggression that I may have. So I think there's a lot of positive aspects to it that for me personally have been very beneficial.
Are a lot of the members of your team, are they ex-military as well or in the military? Or what's their background? So you mentioned they're very diverse. So I was wondering.
It's very diverse. We have people that have never been in the military. We have people that have. One of the people I play with is actually a drummer in a rock band out in Southern California. He's never been in the military. We have a girl I play with that lives up in Amarillo that was in the Navy that's now a college student. I have a guy from work that I play with. His grandfather was in the military. He's never been in the military. A buddy of mine from Canada was in the 82nd Airborne Division. It's just diverse. I have a husband and wife couple that I play with up in Oklahoma City. Neither of them were in the military. They're in their early 20s. It's just, it's all across the board, I think.
And you were saying you get a chance to sometimes meet people in person?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's easier for the people that are nearby, like the ones that live up in Oklahoma. I go up to Oklahoma City to the VA, and I'll let them know when I'm coming up, and we'll try and work so we can get together and do lunch and spend a couple hours visiting and just hang out in person. So it is a social release.
Would you have ever expected that when your wife bought you that Xbox years ago?
No, not at all. The first couple years, I didn't talk to anybody. I just played. In fact, I didn't even play online. Initially, I just played the games. And then as I got better, then I started transitioning online. And it just kind of grew from there.
We'll be right back.
5 times 5 equals 25. 1/5 of 100 is 20. You calculate the perimeter by adding the length of all sides. 4/8, 2/4, 1/2, they're all the same things. You know how I know all these things? Because I play Seven Generation Games. Seven Generation Games teaches math skills I need to learn through cool games I want to play. And they build on each other, so just by playing awesome games, I've mastered multiplication, fractions, averages, you name it. I might be small now, but before you know it, I'll be doing advanced calculus and linear regression. And I'll be ready to do it because building a strong math foundation is essential to future math success. Seven Generation Games, games that make you smarter. Buy them at 7generationgames.com/buy. That's 7generationgames.com/buy.
Welcome back to our third and final segment on More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne-Marie DeMars.
And we still have with us Roy Hash. So, Roy,
hello.
Right, this is a segment of our podcast where we ask our guests to give a tip. And it can be really on anything. And it seems like you have lots of life experience and different areas to drop on. But just one thing you wish people would have known, or you wish you would have known, or that you would tell someone if they said, what's a piece of advice you got for me?
All right. I'm going to share with you the advice I share with lots of people at work and that I've shared with my family, the younger people. And that is investing. Getting an IRA started, or if you have the option at work, getting a 401k started. The power of compound interest, most people don't understand it, they don't know about it, and they go through life never availing themselves of something that is so important. Bankers are rich because they understand the rule of 72. And the rule of 72 is basically this. You take the amount of interest that you're getting and divide it into 72, and it tells you how fast your money doubles. So if you're putting your money in a savings account at the bank and get 3% interest, your money's going to double every 24 years. You can take that same money, put it in a crummy mutual fund that pays 12%, and your money doubles every 6 years. So if people would start that at age 20, put away $100 a month until age 62, they're going to have $1 million in the bank. It is what it is. And as I've told people at work, you either start and you do it, or you'll be like me at my age and not have $1 million in the bank. The 62 years is going to pass either way, whether you take the advice and put some money away or you don't. And then you're going to be like people I see at work that are in their 70s and 80s that are there because they have to be, not because they want to be. So start early. It doesn't take much, literally $100 a month from age 20, and you'll be a millionaire. Two of my children have listened to my advice. My 30-year-old daughter will have her condo paid off in about 3 years. She has money in her 401k. My oldest son will retire at age 50 because he started investing early, so he'll be done. I got started investing late, but when I was younger, I didn't understand about investing, didn't even think it was a possibility. So my 401k was the time I spent in the military. Now, since I've retired, I've been able to actually start a 401k and put some money away. It's not difficult. It's not hard. And most places where you invest your money that are reputable will give you really good advice. And you just make the final decision. But my advice is do it. Don't put it off.
I think that's great advice, and especially if you work for an employer that matches it. I once worked for an organization that matched your 401k contributions 2-to-1, up to 7% of your income. And I couldn't believe that everybody didn't take advantage of that. I mean, that's like free money, right? And yeah, I just didn't get it. It's the same thing. You know, my husband worked for a big company, and they matched dollar for dollar what he put into his IRA. And the number of people say, well, you know, I really can't afford that because I've got kids at home and that. And, you know, we had four kids. But, yeah, I just couldn't understand how if somebody says, I will put the money, whatever you put up, I will match it. You wouldn't say, yes, that's a good deal. But you're right. Lots of people don't because I don't know.
Maybe they don't fully understand the math because Roy broke it down really well. So
yeah. They
could get cool games that would teach them more about math for when people like Roy aren't there.
All right. Well, that's our show for today. So like us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you're listening, and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of More Than Ordinary.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary, while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.